Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han. Han, how are you?
I am marvelous, Jim. How are yourself today?
Not too bad. We're expecting every possible weather event between now and the next 24 hours. It's going to snow, it's going to sleet, it's going to rain, it's going to have sunshine. We're going to have it all. So welcome to Northwest Ohio. I know down there it's real boring. It's just sunny all the time down where you're at, right?
It is. Once we're done with the episode, I'll just make your day with a panoramic video shot I did last night at Treasure Island, just to give you some ray of sunshine. How's that?
Wonderful. Well, tonight's show, we're going to have a very interesting topic, episode Straight Talk number 21. Do I really need an architect / designer? I guess we could say in a nutshell, yes, but we're going to elaborate that. We didn't want tonight's show to be like a 30-second show. No, we're going to go through all the options, the discussions, and actually a thorough, in-depth review so that you have the necessary information. I don't want to call it a checklist, but at least you have the knowledge that if you don't hire us, for example, but hire someone else, at least you have the necessary information to be able to hire the right individual or the right group to be able to help your project succeed. I guess the first question we want to start out with, and quick discussion as a introduction to this topic, is what does an architect do? Now, when I say architect, I really want to lump together an architect / designer. In our organization, I fill the role of architect. I'm trained, licensed, the whole nine yards, and deal with the specifics necessary to get my licensure in the necessary states that we work in to satisfy our clients. Han is the senior designer. Now, he's also trained. There's an experience, just doesn't have a particular license attached to his name as an architect. We each have a little separate, different roles, but we also have overlapping roles. So, you know, he specializes in the specifics of the design and dealing with especially the dental side. I specialize in the uniquenesses of the legal side, the code, the interpretation, the zoning, all that stuff. But at the same time, our knowledge base overlap quite a lot. So in tonight's discussion, we're just going to use the word architect, but in reality, that means an architect and a designer. So in a nutshell, there's several things that we, as the architect, should provide for you as your owner. You're the owner. We work for you. We should contract with you. That's the way we like to see it. We feel the most comfortable in that arrangement and actually feel very strongly that it's actually the best solution. There are other methods, but you can go back to some of our podcasts and listen to those other methods and other aspects of what an architect does, but and how they interrelate with you. But we basically, first off, coordinate the complete process. And those two words, coordinate the process, or three words, are, that's a big mouthful, isn't it, Han?
It's pretty complex. It's not that simple. But yes, it is.
Yeah. I mean, the coordination, and Han does quite a lot of it. I do a bunch of it as well. But when it comes to the coordination side, there are so many things. We literally could do two shows on just the areas of coordination that are necessary for a project. Everything from the very beginning of a project when we're dealing with existing code and zoning aspects and how they affect the design solution, all the way through to during and in construction, as the coordination with the local building officials and the contractor that's doing the work and the interpretation of the drawings and the design and how that integrates with the equipment and materials that are being placed out there, and all in an effort to do one thing, to go from your initial design to the point where you could move in and start and utilize that facility after you've got your CO, which is the construction occupancy permit. So the coordination is crucial, and we have a standard criteria, or at least we call it our process, of how we like to go through the design sequence. Go back to one of our episodes in the beginning when we talk about the process, and that it elaborates on that. But it's crucial. We feel very important to the project success is to be able to have that. Now, we touched a little bit about the other aspect is the architect is responsible for interpreting the regulations, and those are regulations that come from a whole lot of places. Local codes, zoning boards, planning and zoning criterias, building codes. Our engineers have to also interpret and integrate the mechanical, the electrical, the plumbing, the structural codes, which they're all there, fire safety codes, what we call life safety codes, both for us and our engineers. All of those things have to be interpreted and properly integrated into the design solution. So we're specifically trained, have the knowledge base and the years of experience in dealing with this aspect of the work. So it's crucial that if you're going to look at or hire an architect to be part of your team, that you have someone who has a knowledge base and has the ability to be able to do that. I don't want to be.
You left out one, Jim. One big major thing that often affects the design and usability of a space, of any space, has to do with accessibility, or also known as the ADA.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a federal one.
We don't normally get involved or too much into the OSHA issues, nor the HIPAA issues, but in our design work, those consideration also need to be looked at and integrated into the design thinking, as well as execution process, so that the end result or the end product will give you the best performance and efficiency you're looking for with as little issue as possible. That's come from the design standpoint.
You're exactly correct. And actually, what we're talking about tonight doesn't have any issue. It's still the same kind of code thing, whether it's a renovation, whether it's a rebuild, or whether it's a new build. Once you get into a building, wherever it is, you know, you can be going into a retail center and taking a rental space, whether it's a lease, whether you own it, it doesn't matter. All of those things still have to be up to the code criteria, and that's where the architect comes in, and our team of engineers. So you're exactly right. The American with Disabilities Act has quite a few criterias that affect the design, affect the solution that we come up with about how things go together. And that's kind of jumps into the next aspect of what we do as the architect. The architect is really responsible for creating conceptual space designs that solve your particular problem. So how many times a doctor comes to us and has absolutely no idea what they want? Well, our role is to help them determine what they need, what they can afford, and how it integrates with what they're particularly looking at, whether it's a rental space or a new build, and how it's going to function or possibly be able to fit within that box or fit within that property. So we create these conceptual spaces. It's one of the steps in the process. And that has to be integrated against how many operatories do you want? What other support spaces do you want? How large of a lobby do you feel comfortable with? How does it function and flow? All those things are crucial that I like to use the word orchestrate. We're like the conductor. We orchestrate all of these ideas and thoughts, put them together, and create solutions on paper and virtual reality so that we can portray what the new space is going to look like and how your new facility is going to feel. Because the bottom line is we're creating spaces that are for human beings to walk into, your patients, and to help put them at ease, to be comfortable, enjoy some aesthetic excitement, and not just kind of, a warehouse or a utilitarian kind of space. You need to have, at least we feel very strongly, that you need to have spaces that are basically a reflection of you and your practice. You need to portray the ability that you have. You have an exceptional ability to be able to help and serve your client with your dentistry. But at the same time, you need to portray that by your space, by your building, by your facility, everything from cleanliness
in the nutshell, it's the way that design of the space, of course, the objective is to give you the most functional space as possible, the most efficient space as possible, maximize the usage of the square footage available. But all of that is done to tell a story, your story. Some of the tasks that we go through, we will identify not just your clinical need, we identify your administrative need, your staff need, and as well as your future needs. Because, we speak in generalities. But if we leave out a piece of our design process, like, are you going to stay here and expand, or are you going to move once the lease is over, and build someplace else? But if you're going to stay here and as you grow, you're going to expand. So if you're going to expand, that information we need to know, so that way when the space is laid out, it's laid out in a way that allow you to do the expansion with as little disruption, with as little redone as possible, so that when everything is done, it tells one single story. Like Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. And that, and that process is important. The orchestrating of your office is one of our largest and crucial role. Jim?
Exactly. And actually, that's where Han really shines. His ability to be able to get into get into the mind of the dentist and be able to pull out through your questions and their answers as to how they want to actually work, how they want their office to flow, how it wants to function, how, get into the minds of the staff and orchestrate this in such a way that if it's not functioning now, design a space that will allow for them to function in the most optimistic, optimum situation where everybody is, I want to use the word, happier at what they do, but they're, you know, reduce the stress level. You can do so many things from, you know, what colors do you use on the wall? What kind of materials do you use on the floor? All those things integrate into this design process. And that's what an architect does. And specifically, like us, ones that focus and deal directly with the dentistry world. We have that unique experience to be able to do that and we're able to provide that. The other thing that is really crucial, that one of the roles that the architect plays, is that we manage the complete team. Obviously, you as the owner are the leader. You're the leader of the team itself because it's your facility. It's your building. It's going to be your space. It's going to be where you're at. So I kind of look at that as you're the team owner, and we're the quarterback. And then you have a whole bunch of other team members that play the necessary, if you want to use the football analogy, play the other necessary roles in trying to get to the goal line. We basically manage that team and help to prepare the necessary solutions and decision-making processes so that you can actually get to that point of finalizing, building, and utilizing your final solution in basically creating a successful practice. So I guess in a more of a broad brush kind of discussion, there's unique aspects about pieces and parts, but when you look at an architect, you know, architect A, architect B, try to get an understanding about those aspects, you know, how they deal with the process. How do they look at working with the team? You know, what's their management philosophy on how would they coordinate things? What is their, you know, what's their experience with past clients, and get an idea of what they say about how the process worked and how the solutions were. Did they in fact have the knowledge base and to be able to interpret the codes, and were there no issues, and was that process a smooth process and resulted in less stress and a successful project? So as to
let
the question
of... Let me interject a couple of things here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me interject a couple. In determining your team member, your architect, and I think part of the trait that I find, if I'm the owner and looking for team members to put together to build my building, I like to know not just that they can dream, okay? Those guys are important. I think both Jim and I had, had been infirmed and been in situations on projects where you have extremely talented design people, but they can dream, but they don't know how to solve problems. They play a certain role, and then you get them out of the way. What I typically look for is people that are hands-on. They're not afraid to get into the ditches. They're not afraid to get, you know, to get their hands dirty. They know how to solve problems, because everything that's involved in project, all projects had design issue, code issue, spatial issue. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, and you need people that can think and chew gum and walk at the same time. And I find that for architects and designers, If you can find those individuals that fit those, that has those characteristics, hug them. Okay? Because they solve problems rather than create problems. And they certainly, go ahead, Jim.
No, that's very, very true. When I look at particularly staff, and if we're looking to hire an individual to be part of our organization, the number one thing that I need to be very comfortable with and be able to know for a fact is this individual knows how to build what they are trying to design. So if they have expertise or experience in the construction trade, or at least to be able to understand how things go together, how things are actually placed one on top of another, on top of another, on top of another, and how you then actually create a building, that's crucial. That's crucial in having a quality architectural entity, a team member. They need to know how things are built. And if they have that actual physical experience of doing it themselves, they're even better. Because, as Han said, dreamers are great, but if it can't be built, or if it can't be built effectively or efficiently or on budget, then what good is the dream? It's always great to dream, but if your budget is for X and you don't have the ability to get extra money to be able to do X and Y and Z, well, then you've not solved the problem. You actually failed. And so the knowledge base, an architect or a designer who knows how things go together, has hopefully done it physically themselves before, so he knows what he or she is drawing and putting down on paper can actually physically be done and be done cost effectively. You're right, Han. That is a very crucial aspect of when you're looking at an architect or a designer.
Jim, there's always a little bit of confusion when it comes to compare or deciding whether I go with the architect or I will go with the contractor, it appears to me the general public has this general belief that a contractor know what to do. You can skip the architect or the contractor, know exactly what to do. And, he can design it and put it together and all that stuff, so it saves you money and all that good stuff. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Because I know how to explain it. But from the architect, if that is presented to you as a point of argument, what do you have to say?
Well, that's actually a question we've had numerous times before. The builder is one of the team members. We feel very strongly that the builder should not be the quarterback. They should not be the leader of the team. They're not positioned. They're coming at the project from a different angle and a different approach than what us, the architects, do. We have a different knowledge base and training base, and so you're kind of like having, you're kind of like having the kicker play quarterback. Now, sometimes the kickers, they cross train and they can play quarterback, but in reality, they're not the best at it. You want the best person in every role, and the best person in the role is put the architect in the architectural role and put the builder in the builder role, and work together in such a way to solve the problem. Now, 9 times out of 10, if you have the builder, the general contractor, be the leader of the team, they can't do the design work that the architect needs to do. So they're going to hire it. They're going to hire somebody. You may or may not even know who they are. It may be all filtered through the builder. In one particular method called design build, the architect doesn't even work for you as the owner. there's no contractual relationship. There's no direct input. Nine times out of the 10, it all goes right through the builder and is focused and coordinated through them to this architect slash group of designers that are off in the weeds somewhere that you never really get a chance to interface with or talk with. And we feel very strongly that that's not the best way to approach a successful project, because it doesn't allow for all the things that an architect should be doing for you. Things like dealing with cost-saving options, dealing with spatial relationships and how one area flows from the other area, that flows to the other area, and you know, here are two or three or four possible options, and how do you feel that that will work? You know, all of that gets run through the builder with his, you know, I want to say his glasses on, and he's looking at it from one aspect, and only one aspect is, how fast can I get this built? How cheaply can I get this built? So
how much money can I make out of it?
And by inference, how much money can I make out of that? Now, not all contractors work that way, but very rarely do you find the ones that actually don't, because they're in business to make money. You know, they're not in business to do what the architecture says or the architect says. They're in business to make money, and so they want to do it as a, that's their mission. Their mindset is to, how fast can I get this built? How efficiently can I get it built so that I can effectively make money? So you're putting the wrong player in charge of the team, that the wrong member in charge of the team to orchestrate this thing. And so you effectively, you kind of set yourself up to fail from the start. Now, have there been successful projects like that? Sure, there have. But I would ask the question, what would it have been like? How would the project gone if the architect was in charge of the team as opposed to the builder? So I don't know if that answers your question specifically, but the, you know, that's the answer that I would give.
Yeah, in general, you know, based on your experience, what would be the main reasons where they would go that route and not the route with having a contractual relationship with the architect and let the architect lead the project?
Perceived savings in fees. And I want to use the word perceived. There's still a pile of work that has to be done. You know, there is a big pile of work that has to be done, and effectively that costs money. That pile of work is all the things we talked about, all that code interpretation, all the design work, all the necessary things to be able to create the solutions and be able to create the final documents that then get built and go through all the coordination and such to the point where you can occupy your building. That takes time, which means you have to pay somebody to do that for that time. So if the builder is the one that says, no, I'll put that in my under my wing, it'll be part of my price. First of all, you don't know what you're paying for and how much it is and what level of the individual you're getting as part of that task. But second of all, you never ever really know what the number is, because the builder can very easily, and we've seen it so many times before, not all of them do it that way, but a lot do. They'll bury the cost of the necessary work in other aspects of the project itself. So in reality, you never really know exactly how much it costs for the design work, the documents necessary. There's really never an apples. There's not a line item that says in the estimate that it's this amount, because they're just giving you a number. They gave you a number that were, you know, for $2 million, we're going to build your building for you. But you don't know what all the pieces and parts are in there, and how much you paid for this and how much you pay for that.
You seldom do.
You seldom.
With
you
the,
very
with design,
seldom.
Yeah.
Do.
With, Yeah, with the design build, in essence, the person that makes all design, all technical, all financial decision is the contractor. You have absolutely no oversight. You have absolutely no transparency. You have absolutely no advocates. Quality control. There is no check and balance. So, you know, that is the role where the architects fill and are trained to fulfill.
One of the roles,
of course,
yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the many role and function that the architect play. Naturally, of course, every one of us have heard that time is money. And those role and services and expertise take time. And so...
And I'll bring out a very explicit example of checks and balances. I mean, it may seem like a little thing, but in actuality, it is a big thing. On a project that we've been working on, just recently finished up, the builder decided to create the countertops with an inferior. I'm sorry, not the countertops, but the cabinetry itself with an inferior product as the inner guts. So the plastic laminate, the covering on either side of the cabinet itself was what was specified, but the inside of it was a less inferior product. And if it wasn't for the role of the architect, in the observation that we do, that's part of our role, it would not have been identified. And that would have been brought to the owner's attention. So effectively, that's one area that you talk about the checks and balances. Another example is on a particular project we've had, the doors on the particular project had been altered. Let's say the door opening was to be a 2 foot, 10 inch door. So 2 foot, 10 inches wide. It was evident by us going through the project and looking at it that the door had been sliced down and made to fit the 2 foot, 10 inch opening. And then a thin piece of veneer was applied to the edge of the door to try to hide the cut. And effectively created a inferior product for the owner. Not was what was specified, something that would last over the years, but in essence, cosmetically it looked okay, but in reality, it would not have survived over an extended period of time, which is what the owner paid for, but wasn't receiving. Again, a checks and balance to be able to make sure that the design intent is carried through all the way through into the construction. So if the builder was running that project and they felt comfortable enough to be able to install that and say it was okay, then you, the owner, would have been stuck with that inferior product.
No, yeah, it basically, you know, the door is probably $300-$400. But there's two things that happened with that particular incident. One, it destroyed the structural integrity of the door. Two, it voided the warranty. Because from a manufacturer, when you cut the door, you basically alter their, you know, the product. Therefore, the warranty is null and void. So that's two things that happened because they decided to fix a problem that they create because they didn't order the right size door. Okay, if you don't have a person on the job, usually that's the architect that go through and look at the quality of the construction, and catch those things. You, the owner, unless you are well-trained, well-versed in the construction field, have mastered a few do-it-yourself projects, over a number of years and stuff like that, you may not catch that. And in essence, you own an inferior, own and pay for an inferior product that you more likely will have to replace down the road after the 1 year construction warranty.
Yeah.
So
another
yeah.
example is, you know, we mandate that we get a balance report. A balance report is from the heating and air conditioning system, basically is a specialized report where they go around to each one of the diffusers in your system and actually physically measure the volume of air coming through that fixture at certain temperatures. So that report is then checked against the design criteria that was put in the original drawings by our engineer to make sure that what was actually built is what was designed. And on this particular project that I'm thinking of, Han knows what I'm thinking of, it was found
yeah.
that the ductwork that was created was not created properly so that the final resort of the amount of air coming out of the particular diffuser was not up to the specifications. Now, the normal person would never, ever know the difference until there's a problem like it's too cold in the lobby or it's too hot in this particular room. But mostly it's, you know, more than likely it's too cold in the lobby. And that is an issue. So what's that do to your perception of your client when they first walk into the place and go, man, it's cold in here? Well, all of a sudden, their perception of you and your dentistry are knocked down a couple, two or three pegs, because you know you don't have your stuff together and have a decent place for me to come to. But you paid for it.
Besides that, it's also that if when things are not done to specification, it usually means that you're spending more energy, which equate to more money unnecessarily. And I think
right.
money usually is where it gets personal. Okay. So, you know, the architects are not just a pretty face that design that wonderful facility. That's just one of the tasks they do, but they play so many other different roles that add value, great value, to your, you know, to your office or to your project. And the big question is, how do you see them? Is it a, you know, an added expense or a well-funded investment? We like to think it's an investment because the things that we as the architect functions and advocate on your behalf on a project more than pay for itself.
Oh,
that's
an understatement, yeah. Han. That's an understatement.
That, yeah. Yes, it is. Okay. But it's, you know, I don't want to make this as an infomercial for architects. That's what we do.
Yeah, it could be anybody. It doesn't have to be us. Now, of course, we're kind of
right.
jaded. We're jaded because we feel very comfortable with being able to say that we know what we're doing and have done it a whole bunch. But, you know, there are other good architects out there. But you got to do your homework and get the right one and get the one that knows how to do dentistry specifically.
Jim,
that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah. In the process, if a dentist looking at to either renovate his space, move a few walls, change a few rooms, or totally gut a building and rebuild, or buy a raw piece of land and build new. When is there ever an instant where an architect is not involved throughout the project? Is there? Ever?
Well, yes, there is, but it only rolls into that aspect if the governing authority will let you do that. Most people don't understand that by law, in every state except for Texas, if I'm not mistaken, you have to have a licensed architect and a licensed engineer stamp and sign the drawings that are created that the builder builds from. So you have to have that. You can't just have a design created by some entity that is utilized for the actual construction documents and effectively built from. You can't sketch this out on a piece of paper and say, build this for me. It has to be up to code. It has to be stamped and signed by a registered architect and a registered engineer to that particular state, with the exception of Texas, because if you build something less than, I believe it's 5,000 feet in Texas, you don't have to have a registered architect stamp the drawings. It just has to be an engineer.
Yep. That was actually, I've spoken to a couple of the building officials down in Texas, and they see that as a safety mechanism. They, you don't have to have an architect to do the design on building under 5,000 square feet, but you do have to have an engineer seal the drawings that are being submitted for for a permit. And so, and can engineer design buildings? Yes. Can they do as good as an architect? Rarely. Okay, I might sound a little arrogant, but I work with plenty of architects, plenty of engineers, and I hire an architect to design the building every day, every hour. There is some exceptional engineer, but they're very rare, that can design buildings. And from an architectural standpoint, if you're working on a factory where you're going to have conveyor lines and process assembly lines and things like that, it's basically a big building with columns and equipment. And occasionally maybe a toilet room off the corner somewhere. That task can be easily done by an engineer. But when you look at a dentist's office, forget about it. It's not their role.
Especially if you want to create something aesthetically pleasing that your clients are going to want to come back to. So I don't know why that keeps doing that. Unfortunately, I keep getting notifications about stuff that I've actually turned off. But sorry about that, folks. Dinging in the ear there.
Jim, if listener want to call in, what do they do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess we forgot to do that at the end. Obviously, you've got the number to call in. It was on the link for opening Blog Talk. But, please feel free at 657-383-1442 to call in and ask a question. We can also get more information about Han and I and our team and what we do. You can go to our website, www.hjtdesign.com. And if you have, we've got a really cool system that now is up and running and successfully works, which we're really excited about, is if you want to have a specific conference with either myself or Han, you can go to the calendar, you can go to our calendar, you can pick a time slot and say, would you please have a one-on-one conference with me at this particular time? We'll get a notification, we'll be able to confirm that, and then set up that conference with you. So if you have something you want to specifically ask either one of us, please feel free. Do that. We're here to answer your questions and hopefully get a solution to whatever particular question you might have. So, that's another cool thing that we got in the way of connecting. And then obviously at our website, you can go and see all the previous episodes, the podcasts that are available there for you to pull up and listen to it at your particular leisure. And you have the available time to do that. So back to the discussion of the architect and the designer and why you actually need one. There's the legal side. You have to have one because the code, the building official has drawings have to be stamped and signed and sealed by the architect and the engineer. You can't. And then the little uniqueness about this is there's also a law out there that says, let's say, Fred, for example, that's your friend, and he draws things, and he's drawn up all these drawings and plans, but he's not a licensed architect. But he's going to do all the drawing for you. He drew it all up specifically the way you want to do it. And then you're going to try to find some architect to stamp that drawing and say that they are the ones that created that. That's actually illegal. And the licensed architect could lose their license because of it. And you, the individual that is using the product, would be subject to penalties, including shutting your project down, which could be extremely expensive, especially if you were in the process of, let's say, for example, you get through the process and you're building this project and you're partially through the project. They could even revoke your occupancy permit after you totally completed the project because it wasn't done that way. So I guess it used the words buyer beware. You know, don't let anybody say that you can do that. Don't let a builder or some other entity say that, well, we'll just get such and such over here to stamp the drawings. Run. Please run.
Let me see. That's a little bit of short-sightedness on the buyer's part, is that, of course, everything costs money. And you're always looking for a way to reduce, the expenditure or the cost of the project. So, you know, you might say, what's the harm of having, you know, Bob the architect, who knows Fred, who just steal my drawings, and we'll go with that. And it'll save me a ton. I don't have to hire an architect to do anything for me. The other, you know, and I've heard people say, that's a scare tactic that you use because that would drive clients to your office or to your door. No, that's not a scare tactic. That is somebody care enough to tell you facts. If you become the person that are lucky enough, fortunate enough to pull the short straw, I'd love to hear from you after the dust settle and say, you are right. Okay? You don't want to be that individual. So no, it is not a scare tactic. It is facts. Okay? And so it end up will probably cost you a lot more in delay. And it will cost you, then you're going to have to spend the money anyway doing it right the first time. Hire an architect to do it legally.
It is a messy, it's a sticky wicket, as the British would say. Now, we were talking a little bit about the cost implications of obviously the architectural team. We cost money, you know, just like anything. Our time is worth something. We consider it very cost effective and valuable to the process, but our time is worth some fee. That fee is specific to your particular project. For us, it is. And, you know, it is something that, as Han was saying, is a investment into the success of your project. And it's an investment in a bunch of ways. First of all, by hiring the right architect and designer who knows what they're doing, has the expertise, we can do it faster and better. We can do it more efficiently and give you a better result than some other architect, for example, who doesn't know the nuances of a particular project, like a dentist office. I'm not saying that they're better architects or we're better than they are. It's just that, you know, we've gotten our nose bloodied. We've gone through all of the aspects of dentistry. And on what you like to say, we eat, drink, and sleep this stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. And Bill makes fun of us because when we get together and we're at a conference or something like that, we're not talking about the local ball game or whatever. We're kind of boring. We're talking about aspects about, okay, what about this particular product that we think we should start utilizing because it it's new and it's exciting, and actually it's a more cost-effective solution. You know, we talk about those boring things, but that's because we're excited about what we do, and we're excited about how it could potentially impact our projects and thus the success of our clients. So we are really responsible for and do provide things like cost-saving options. You know, you can do a lot of things with inexpensive materials, make them very attractive, make them that they will last a long time, and they will solve the particular problem and work very well in the design of a dental office. So we bring that kind of thing to the table where a builder, for example, wouldn't have that knowledge base because they just don't have the volume of dental projects like we have. They've not been experienced and not been associated with. I mean, Han, I'm sure you quit counting, but how many, what do you think? How many plans have you reviewed as your mentor aspect at Dental Town? You're probably into tens of thousands.
I have 10 toes and 10 hands, and it's more than that.
Yeah. I think it's in the multiple thousands that you've looked at. And, you know, you critique.
It's quite a few. Let me add a couple of things with Jim. Okay. A contractor's function is to build what we design. It's not the other way around. A contractor may have been exposed to product that he used on other projects that he worked on where other architects may have had designed. The main thing is, before we even suggest a particular paint, we already done the research of what that paint, function, durability, and all that good stuff. If we suggest a type of flooring, we have already done the research compared to numerous of other manufacturers and so on, to see the durability, the performance, and all that stuff, the life cycle, and what have you. We do more research and know more about that product than often more than the salespeople, because we once it's down, it's our name, it's our reputation, because we suggest it, we endorse it. So we, before anything go into your project, any product, any material, any concept, it is thoroughly investigated, thoroughly thought out, thoroughly solved. We don't do things just because they look pretty. You didn't hire us to make things look pretty. It has to be functional. It has to be durable. It has to be easy to maintain. It has to be economical. It has to meet an array of criteria, needs, qualifications, and all that stuff. Your architects are like your building geek. They, you know, like Jim said, we live it, we breathe it, we sleep it, we talk about it all the time. We're kind of like that motor that just run and run about buildings, because it's quite exciting. But there's always new things. We truly, I think I can speak for Jim as well, that we always are in seek of better mousetrap. Why? Because we're looking for a better mousetrap for our next client, the next project that we're involved in, so that way we can improve every project that we're involved in, we have the honor to be involved in, that we can add a little bit more value for the same cost, if not less. That sounds a little weird, sounds a little cliche. It's just who we are.
And on top of everything you just said, it also has to look good. So, you know, we're going, and on top of all of that, we also make sure that this is not our building. It's not our decision-making process. It's your decision. It's the owner's decision. It's your building. So we're going to give you a bunch of options, and you're going to look at those options, and we're going to make recommendations. So we're going to say, this is the advantages and the disadvantages of this product over this product. We would recommend you use this, but you can use this, this, or this. You choose. And it's your building. You've got to live there. we're going to be there when it's done. We're going to look at it. We're going to take pictures, and we're going to be proud of it. But it, you have to live there on a day-to-day basis. And so it's crucial that you have someone who's there working with you. And, you know, that's what we do. That's what the architect does. And it's important that all of this kind of works together and flows. Han, you were telling me about a entity that I believe posted, and they had a rather unique discussion that they wanted to share with everybody. Would you like to share that with the listeners tonight?
Yeah, I don't want to throw names. Okay, a doctor was in the process of having a building designed. The doctor bought the building, and so, you know, that's one of the very first questions that we usually ask. If you own the building or you lease the building, because when you own the building, you can do pretty much anything you want within structural and financial limitation. Okay, but you have a lot of leeway and flexibility. If you lease, then you're going to have to beg, steal, and bribe the owner if you can change things. In this case, the doctor bought the building and hired a design firm to design. And I think a lot of our clients usually have a certain preconceived expectation of what the design community can do. I can tell you, we don't do magic. Everything that I've done, it takes time, and it usually takes more time than not. Once in a while, I'm at this for so long and so many different type of projects and stuff like that, and often the ratio of hitting it right, are ranging in the high 80-90 percentile. So when I present a layout for the first time, the bulk of the work, and problems and all of the particular have been worked out. So we only had to tweak a few little things. So it's never a redo, rarely. The doctor didn't realize how long it take. The biggest thing that I think that came to her understanding is that it takes so much coordination. Regardless whether you are located in the United States or Canada or India or Australia or any place else abroad, with technology today, communication could be done pretty easy, pretty effectively. The big important thing is all the members of your team have to be on the same page. They need to check their ego at the door before they come into the conference room. So that way they don't take ownership of a design and fight for it and not be flexible to give the client the solution they need. So her discovery is that it takes more time. It's more challenging. And to have the designer, architect, contractor, dental rep, and all of that working independently, go in their own direction, embracing and holding tight onto their own design and not meeting the main objective for the owner. In the long haul for us is that, yes, there's a few exceptions in the country where an architect is not required. However, on every place else in the United States, at least every place that we have done projects, an architect would need to be involved sometime onto that project. If they are well-versed in the area of designing dentist offices, they should be one of the first person to your table, not last. They don't function very well as janitor. They don't clean up other people's. They don't like to clean up other people's job or messes after it's done. They like to be up at the front helping you to avoid those pitfalls. You know, they know code, they know zoning ordinance, they know accessibility guidelines. They are trained to design. They're very technical in building systems and the design process. They are your conductors. So let them lead that role rather than invite them to the table at the end when everybody already make a mess and give them a mop to clean up after them. By then, you already commit to a lease or bought a building, and the design that the solution may be a lot less than what you would desire simply because you didn't have enough physical space to work with. Okay, so I think, without going too much naming and stuff like that, I think in the nutshell, that was one big thing that she came to understanding is that it takes more time than expected. And the right people should have been involved at the upfront would be the architect. And hopefully it's the architect. In this case, the architect was not well-versed in dental, and so it makes the process a little bit more difficult. For us, and a little bit of plug for us here, is that we are an architecture firm. We specialize in dentist offices, and we design across the country. We have architects that well-established, well-respected architects that come to us and ask if we will be, if we could serve as a consultant on the team with them so that we can give them the guidance that they need and things like that. So even architects, well-versed, well-seasoned architects are smart enough to come to the right people when they needed help. And I hope that dentists certainly are smarter than architects, that they would come to the same conclusion is that get the right help. Not just help, but the right help. Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to share with our listeners an interesting little note that we received on a document that just came from one of our clients. It came from a design group. And at the bottom corner of this design, this layout, it says, and I'm quoting, "It is the architect/contractor's responsibility to verify that all code restrictions and clearances are met." And this is in a big box in the bottom corner of that document. What does that mean? What that means is that what the doctor, received is basically useless in the sense that it can't be used for anything other than the purpose it was created for, and that's to see how many of this and how many of that can potentially fit within that space. It cannot be used.
You're talking about equipment, right, Jim?
Right. It cannot be used to be built from. You can't take it and get a building permit. You can't take it and create a final solution or final design from. It is not a document that can be utilized for that. You need an architect, whether it's us or somebody else. You need an architect. Now, they lumped a contractor in there as well, but in reality, that's not incorrect because the contractor, it's not their legal responsibility to verify any of that because the role of a contractor is not that of a designer or not that of the architect. They just build. They are not the entity that actually is held to the requirements that we, the architects, are. So
Jim,
I just
okay,
thought that I share, was I thought that was very interesting to share with the group that they even
yeah know. It's actually that is a very common disclaimer when you receive that particular sketch from a supplier.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They basically what they tell you is that they haven't done what's necessary on your behalf. Okay. The particular layout that Jim just read that disclaimer to the listener, to your folks, is that it was done for a proposed project pretty much in our backyard. So we are very familiar with the local codes and stuff like that, and I haven't really ripped it apart in terms of the flaws. I just can't help myself when I look at a layout. If Frank Lloyd Wright today is still alive, and he posts a layout that he did for a dentist out in Arizona, onto Dentaltown, I'll be the first, one of the first, if not the first, to be there with my red pen.
And for our listeners who don't know, Frank Lloyd Wright was a pretty famous architect back in the 20s.
Okay, I am fearless. I'll tell you that. Okay, the main thing is it's not. There's a lot of code violations, and so when an architect gets involved, that more likely will be us. We will have to tear it apart and start over, because when you have a space that's not designed to code, often, particularly for accessibility code to ADA, you need more room. And so when you take more room out of space that already have little room, you have less room for the clinical, to meet the clinical requirement and to meet the, administrative and staff requirement. So all those things, to start the process right. Our motive is to design the best and functional office possible. We don't have any other motive. We don't sell anything. We don't sell equipment. We couldn't care less. Whatever you buy, we coordinate with it and we put it in. We don't make a dime out of that. So our motive is different. It's totally counter to a space layout that are presented to the owner to secure an equipment package. It's almost self-serving when you receive something like that from a supplier. They do it to secure their quotas or their sales. But you have a space that you're going to probably commit to a lease that doesn't work, and so you get caught in a situation that less than desirable. Okay, so.
You can. There is the pitfall, and you got to be very careful. One last aspect I wanted to bring out about what the architect brings to the table, and one of the reasons why you need to have them as part of the team, and specifically as the quarterback, is that we provide those cost-saving items. In the construction world, one little, I want to call it mistake or misjudgment or misdirection, can cost you tens of thousands of dollars as the owner. Because when you're building things and an area or a particular item is put in improperly, it tends to be very expensive to fix. And it tends to be very expensive to change. So if you're three quarters of the way through your building and all of a sudden you determine when you walk through it that, oh, this doesn't look right, or this doesn't right, I can't have this particular space beside this particular space, I want to change it. Do you know that is one of the most expensive decisions you can make in your process when you say, I want to change it while you're under construction? You can spend thousands of dollars in a heartbeat by doing that. Our role is to make sure you never, ever, ever get to the point that you are in construction and you're saying, I want to change something. We've already walked through everything. We've already given you all the possibilities. We do all that during the design process. A good architect will provide all of those things during the design process so that once the construction starts, all of those things are out of your head and all of those things don't have any impact on your building. So the builder can focus on one thing, and that's building it as quickly and as cost effective as possible. So you can move forward and get into the building. You don't want to be making changes while this thing is under construction, because you will spend multiple times more of what that architect's fee was in a heartbeat by making one or two little changes by, oh, I just want to move this opening, or I'm going to move that wall, or I want to put a new window over here, or I want to make that window bigger. You could spend tens and even hundreds of thousands of dollars over, you know, just three little words. I want to move.
Yeah, it's not a magical thing. We both Jim and I are from old school. We can draw with pencils and ink. But nowadays we use a computer. The computer only allow us to input information in about, you know, somewhat a little faster than you can draw manually. But it can erase a whole set of drawing one push of a button. The change that we often hear about is that I just want to move a couple walls. You might as well say, I just want to redesign my building. Okay? Because it's like that balloon. Once you inflate it, when you squeeze on one end, expand at the other end, it's a static thing. If you change anything, it affects the entire building, not just, oh, I just moved a wall. That's pretty silly. If you work on a patient and they ask you, can you move this tooth right here 1 millimeter to the right? You probably laugh and kick them out of the office because it's not funny. Okay,
no,
it takes, I
like to use the analogy, Han, is like, okay, we're going to fill this particular tooth, but we're going to use a standard filling material, and you're all done with the filling material, and you're just about ready to wrap everything up, and the client says, no, I'd like you to replace, I want to actually fill that with gold.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure, it's going to cost you tens of thousands of dollars. No.
So,
I want you to. Yeah. And then on top of that, there's the delay. Now, most people don't get it. And we try to get this into our client's head. Time is money. And time is money from the dental side, in that every day you don't have that operatory up and running is money that you'll never get back. It's money you've lost. It's like water over the dam. It's gone. So by creating a solution that's done quickly, effectively, and efficiently, and done in the shortest period of time, then you minimize the amount of time that building is not making money for you. Because those operatories being up and running are what makes money, and what makes money for you and your facility and your organization. So, you know, the time spent, We need to do it. We do it efficiently and quickly so that you can get into that space as soon as possible and start making money. Well, we've actually spent a little bit more than normal on our time frame here, Hans. So we're going to, I would say, let's
wrap
push
up
off our Dental Town discussion till next week. We will have a show next week on another topic that hopefully will be very exciting to our group. And again, thank you for indulging us and listening to us talk to you straight, I guess, is the way to look at it. Because as Han has said before, we're just trying to give you the facts. You know, we'd be glad to help you. We'd be honored if you wanted to utilize our services. But if you don't, at least use a architect or designer that's licensed in your area, that has the ability or at least has the knowledge, has done this before, because if you don't, you're already setting yourself up to fail, and we want to see you succeed. That's why we exist. With that, I'd say thank you and hope all goes well, and we look forward to hearing you next, or at least hearing from you, and we'd like to be part of your practice in your day next Tuesday. On.
And thank you for spending the time with us and tuning in. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.